Good afternoon, it's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on the 18th of October, the year 2011, it's Alaska Day. Coming up today on the show, we'll talk to pianist Tatiana Scott, one of the performers at this month's Festival of Russian Culture. We'll also learn how high school students are preparing for careers with guests Debbie Banizak and Karen Smolin. Here are the writers Almanac, Bird Known Music, More, Little Robert Service, and some Larry Beck today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for the rest of today, showers, high temperatures around 48 degrees. Forecast for tonight, more rain showers at the low temperatures around 39 degrees. Wednesday and Thursday look like rain showers likely.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez in Anchorage, Alaska. A Native elder shares with youth the importance of Native names in Alaska Native culture. Elaine Chushaw Abraham was the keynote speaker at the Elders and Youth Conference Monday. The Tlingit elder says the name of a newborn child is taken from ancestors, and through that name, a person learns their genealogy and history.
If your name is from an extended family, you have your biological family, and your name will bring in the extended family because they're part of that. So you begin to build this foundation into the community. It gives you your identity, it gives you your history, and it gives you your family tree.
Abraham's grandson, Kai Montour, explains the importance of his native name.
My name, Kakhech, is over 3,000 years old, and that traveled with our clan. We were originally Atna, Athabaskan people in Copper River, and we migrated to Yakutat 3,000 years ago, and that name came all the way with us. So that name is part of our history.
More than 1,000 people are attending the Elders and Youth Conference in Anchorage. Tribal leaders, federal officials, and people across Indian country are honoring the life of Eloise Cobell. The Blackfeet woman led the fight to force the U.S. government to account for more than a century of mismanaged individual Indian trust accounts. As Edward O'Brien reports, Cobell died Sunday of complications from cancer.
Cobell was the lead plaintiff in a class action lawsuit filed in 1996 claiming the Interior Department owed billions to as many as 500,000 Native Americans with land trust accounts. A judge approved a $3.4 billion settlement earlier this year. Montana School Superintendent Denise Juneau is a member of the Mandan and Hidatsa tribes. Juneau says Cobell was a longtime family friend.
She'll be remembered as a woman who had that sense of justice that went to her core. And when we read about her and we learn about her and our younger generations learn about her, they'll know that if you can stay determined and have the courage and have persistence, that she made the world a better place.
For National Native News, I'm Edward O'Brien in Missoula, Montana.
In Canada, protesters took to the streets in more than a dozen cities in support of the Occupy Wall Street movement in the U.S. A recent protest in Winnipeg included addressing Aboriginal issues. Dan Karpinchuk has more.
The global Occupy movement is aimed at ending social injustices. Across Canada, people demonstrated in front of banks, government buildings, and in the financial districts of larger cities. Some demonstrations went into the night as protesters set up tents in parks. That was also the case in front of the Manitoba legislature in the city of Winnipeg. Under sunny skies, supporters held up cardboard placards and peacefully listened to speeches. Several hundred of them took part in what they called an anti-corporate rally. Amy Siepel helped organize the Winnipeg March. She said 1% of the population is controlling 99% of the wealth. And she said there are also issues of particular importance to Manitoba.
We need to start addressing the unavailability for fresh water in our northern communities, the third world living conditions. Our Aboriginal people need us to help them develop more of a voice.
The Winnipeg event and others across Canada were mainly peaceful. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
During this week in 1869, Métis people created the National Council of the Métis to represent their people in negotiations with the Canadian government. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Support for National Native News comes from the National Library of Medicine, featuring its new interactive exhibition, Native Voices, examining the concepts of health and medicine among contemporary American Indians, Alaska Natives, and Native Hawaiians. On the web at nlm.nih.gov/native voices. If you are a Native American who experienced discrimination from the USDA while trying to get a farm loan, you can get free legal help with filing a claim at meetings held around the country through December. Details and a schedule of meetings is at IndianFarmClass.com or 1-888-233-5506. Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. On Alaska Day, today is celebrating the anniversary of the transfer of Alaska on October 18, 1867 from Russia to the United States. The transfer became official in Sitka's Castle Hill. It's a holiday in Alaska. I guess somebody forgot to tell me about that today. Well, it's a good day to talk about the Festival of Russian Culture again. On the phone with me now from Sacramento, California, is pianist Tatiana Scott, and here in the studio with me is Alexander Dulitsky here to talk about the festival, which is coming up a week from this Saturday. Tatiana and Alexander, thank you very much for being on the show with me today.
Oh, thank you for inviting us.
So, Tatiana, a little bit about your background, your pianist time. When did you discover the piano?
Oh, about me. Well, I started playing piano when I was 5 years old. And so I played piano all my life since that. Actually, my parents are physicists, scientists. But because they wanted me to explore a little bit more music than they did, they bought piano when I was 5 years old.
Did you ever think about another instrument besides piano?
Well, I tried violin a little bit, and I do play guitar and sing songs, but it's not professional, just fun.
And you teach piano as well?
Yes, I do teach piano. I teach piano at Sac State, Sacramento State University, and American River College in Sacramento.
Tatiana, can you tell me what helps define Russian music?
Well, it is a difficult question. If you talk about emotions, because how do you define? Yeah, if emotions, probably you would talk about depth of Russian music, in very, very intense music. My favorite composers, maybe I'll tell later, it's Rachmaninoff and Scriabin, and extreme intensity of all qualities. If it's tragic, it's extremely tragic. If it's sweet, it's sweet, but it's also kind of sad sweet. So if you talk about emotions. Now, if you talk about different aspects of music, like harmonic language, rhythmic language, maybe, especially like if you talk about Rachmaninoff, maybe you will find the roots of his language, musical language, in the church music, because when he was a young boy, and actually throughout all his life, it was like a leitmotif of all his music. So if you talk about emotions again, that's depth and intensity of emotions. But in terms of language, maybe you can find more plagal cadences in Russian music than in any other music, because it's based on also on folk, like folk Russian songs. But it's really hard to define, because every composer creates its own world. If you hear Scriabin, you hear his own language, his own world, and he has his own elements of language, as well as you take Lyadov, or you take Griboyedov, or Tchaikovsky. So they all different, but you can hear the same qualities probably.
I've talked to musicians before who compared to the Russian language and the baseness of it, and maybe perhaps the guttural sound of it, and said that how it helps define the Russian music itself, especially when the child is still a baby inside the mother.
Wow, it's also a very interesting question. I think Russian language is a little bit different because it has depths, again, depths in some values, maybe it also defines music, lots of depths. If you hear Russian choir, and probably you can hear also in piano music. It's really hard to say how language can define music.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting question.
Are there any favorite Russian composers, and why are they your favorites?
Like I said, I love Rachmaninoff. Rachmaninoff is my absolutely favorite composer. It just captivated me from even my childhood when I heard his concertos or his preludes, and my dream was to play it. Rachmaninoff is extremely complex, and I'm going to play Rachmaninoff, one of his preludes, very difficult prelude, on this festival. Same qualities, extreme intensity of emotions, and very complex language. Like, you can hear counterpoint in Rachmaninoff. You can hear many voices, and all voices are very intense and difficult. His concertos are extremely beautiful. And also, I love Scriabin. And interesting that they were studying with the same teacher. Zverev was their teacher in Moscow. But they became developed totally different languages. Both of them are Russian composers, but you can say this is Scriabin, this is Rachmaninoff. And I love Scriabin because Scriabin is like, he creates his own very different world, fantasy world, very exquisite and very complex. His harmonic language is extremely difficult, especially late Scriabin. So I would say I love Scriabin and Rachmaninoff the most. Even I love other composers too.
What makes a piece difficult to play or easy to play?
You mean Scriabin and Rachmaninoff?
Yes, for you.
Oh, well, what's difficult, when it's technically very difficult, lots of big chords, lots of big jumps, and difficult passages running in, you know, in both hands in different directions, it's hard. It's hard to coordinate at all.
I'm sure you'll do just fine. What else will you be playing at the festival?
So that's what I will be playing. I will be playing Scriabin and Rachmaninoff. Two very difficult etudes by Scriabin. Etudes Opus 8, D-sharp minor, Opus 8 number 12, which is, some people define it as a nationalistic kind of etude because it's very heroic and very, very difficult and tense with lots of jumps. Another etude by Scriabin and F-sharp minor, totally different characteristics, but very, very difficult too. Also, I will be playing some preludes by Anatoly Yadov. Very interesting and totally contrasting music, sad and sweet. And also, I wanted to introduce people at the festival with music by Alexander Griboyedov. His interesting, beautiful waltzes, very kind of maybe similar to Chopin waltzes, but it's Russian. So that's what I wanted to play. Also, we are going to perform with Kathleen Rainey, and we are going to perform with her Russian music too. She is going to sing Rachmaninoff's Spring Waters, very difficult piece, and very difficult for vocal and vocal part, and very, very difficult for piano part. It's like part of a piano concerto of Rachmaninoff. And another Rachmaninoff, Nipoy Krasavitsa Ты Мне, and Gori-Gori Moya Zvezda, and maybe a couple more songs.
I'm talking with Tatiana Scott, one of the performers at the Festival of Russian Culture, appearing in Centennial Hall a week from this Saturday, starting at about 4 o'clock. Alexander,
if I have something to add?
Yes, please.
Well, just I want to say that... In addition to music and songs and dance, we also are going to have the art exhibition. It is already displayed at the Centennial Hall in the lobby for Tamara Semyonova, artist from St. Petersburg, and Lee Rust, artist from Victoria, Australia. They interpreted the same stories, but in a different way. And I will display six original pieces day before the festival. You know, they're absolutely exquisite. And I just want to say that our event starts at 4 p.m. and ends at around 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the performance, and then the audience can mingle with the artist and view the exhibition. So the people may plan just to come for our events, and then after us there will be a Juno Roller Girls in the same place, and people just can come for our event and then just have a dinner in town and then just go to another event in the same place, or Juno Symphony, as I understand, at 8 o'clock. So Juno Weissman just spent a very good, enlightened day, you know, with the classical music, art exhibition, and then Juno Roller Girls, you know, or Juno Symphony, and have a dinner in between, and the Juno Symphony in high school.
All right, Tatiana and Alexander, thank you very much for being on the show with me today. If people need more information about the festival, is there a website they can find it out by?
Well, yeah, well, about the festival, there is a flyers all around the place, you know, and already one article was written in Juno Empire, and the Emmy Fletcher will write another one, more comprehensive article. They can call me at 789-3854 or the website www.aksrc.org. It is Alaska Severe Research Center, and it is under White Nights Festival. They will find information in the program.
Tatiana, thank you very much for being on the air with me today. And Alexander, thank you for being on the air, too.
Okay, thank you, Tatiana.
Thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me to talk.
See you soon. Bye-bye.
See you soon. Thank you. Bye.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 18th of October, 2011. It's the birthday of Ontozake Shange, born Paulette Williams in Trenton, New Jersey, 1948, author of the play For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough. Her most recent book, the novel Some Sing, Some Cry. It's the birthday of Christina Enrique, born in Delaware, 1977, came from a Panamanian family. Most recent novel, The World in Half. It's the birthday of Abbott Joseph Liebling, A.J. Liebling, New York City, 1904, staff writer for The New Yorker for many years, wrote about food, journalism, boxing, covered World War II, wrote about the day-to-day life among the soldiers and civilians. He later wrote of the war years, "The times were full of certainties. We could be certain we were right, and we were. And that certainty made us certain that anything we did was right, too. I have seldom been sure I was right since. I know that it is socially acceptable to write about war as an unmitigated horror, but subjectively, at least, it was not true. And you can feel its pull on men's memories at the maudlin reunions of war divisions. They mourn for their dead, but also for war." It's the birthday of the playwright Wendy Wasserstein, born Brooklyn, 1950, devoted herself to theater instead of family life, so she wrote a play about it, The Heidi Chronicles, 1988, about a woman who's clung to all her feminist ideals while all of her friends have given them up and gone on to have children. Wendy Wasserstein, who said, "The marriages come and go, but your friendships stay, which is the opposite of what it used to be, so that there will be people in our lives for 30 years, and often it is not your husband, it's your women friends, male friends, with whom you come of age." It's the birthday of the novelist Rick Moody, New York City, 1961, grew up in the Connecticut suburbs, whose passion for writing was ignited by reading Hemingway's The Old Man and the Sea in the sixth grade. He said, "I probably liked the Hemingway novel because I was very interested in sharks." His first novel was Garden State, came out in 1992, of which the author said, "I think it's a truly dreadful book, but it's emotionally accessible and vulnerable, and I admire that." Most recent book, The Four Fingers of Death. Here's a poem for today by Joy Sutphen. From Out the Cave. When you have been at war with yourself for so many years that you have forgotten why, when you have been driving for hours and only gradually begin to realize that you have lost the way, when you have cut hastily into the fabric, when you have signed papers in distraction, when it has been centuries since you watched the sunset or the rainfall, and the clouds drifting overhead pass as flat as anything on a postcard, when, in the midst of these everyday nightmares, you understand that you could wake up, you could turn and go back to the last thing you remember doing with your whole heart, that passionate kiss, the brilliant drop of love rolling along the tongue of a green leaf. Then you wake, you stumble from your cave, blinking in the sun, naming every shadow as it slips. A poem by Joy Sutphen from Out the Cave, from Straight Out of View, published by Beacon Press, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by CenturyLink, a new kind of broadband company linking Americans coast to coast with consistently fast speeds and personal service. More at CenturyLink.com. Produced by our technical director, Thomas Schweitzer. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Today on 360 North, day two of the 2011 Elders and Youth Conference live from Anchorage, part of our week-long coverage of the Alaska Federation of Natives annual convention. 2 hours of international and Alaskan news starts at 6 p.m., then at 8, it's Northwest Indian news. This week's Native Report follows at 8:30. At 9, our ongoing series of documentaries about mental health brings us Unlisted, the story of schizophrenia. Today and tonight on 360 North.
Put on your dancing shoes and put on a smile for this month's Barn Dance, Saturday, October 22nd, 7:30 p.m. at St. Anne's Parish Hall on 5th Street downtown. The hot old-time band Rumblefish will play live music, and Odette Edgar will teach and call conference square dances. As always, you don't need any experience or a partner. Discounts for students and seniors free for SAGA and JVs. Call 586-1787 for more information. Good times, great live music at the Barn Dance this Saturday.
Back in 1926, when Alaska was still a territory, the governor of Alaska, Governor Parks, was in Washington, D.C., and he saw all the flags of the states and territories flying over the capital. Much to his amazement, he realized that Alaska was not represented by a flag. He returned to the territory and asked the American Legion post in Anchorage if they would design a flag. The American Legion turned that job over to all the junior and senior high schools in the territory of Alaska by forming a contest that would award $1,000 and a gold watch to the winner. 145 students entered the contest, and the winner was a 13-year-old Alaska Native boy who was born out on the Aleutian chain, but due to a misfortune in his life, was living in an orphanage in Seward. His name was Benny Benson. When Benny sent his entry to the Legion, he wrote a description of why he had designed the flag as he did. He said, "The blue that I put on this flag is for the sea and the sky and the Alaska flower, the forget-me-not. The gold that I put on this flag is for what the early sourdoughs and miners came to Alaska for, their fortune. The Big Dipper, or the bear, represents the strength of this territory. And I put the North Star on this flag because I hope that, one day, Alaska will become one of the states of the Union." It took until January of 1959 for his dream to come true. At that time, he did become the 49th star. In 1955, a lady by the name of Marie Drake read what Benny had written down, and she was so inspired by this young lad's thoughts that she sat down and wrote the poem, The Alaska Flag. Another lady, Eleanor Dusenberry, took those words and made music for them, creating the Alaska State Song. Eight stars of gold on a field of blue, Alaska's flag, may it mean to you. The blue of the sea, the evening sky, the mountain lakes, the flowers nearby, the gold of the early sourdough's dreams, the precious gold of the hills and streams, the brilliant stars in the northern sky, the Bear, the Dipper, and shining high, the great North Star with
As a parent, you're probably aware of the advantages of homeschooling, but what type of program is best for your student? You might consider HomeBridge, a program associated with the Juneau School District that offers involvement in school district programs like sports and other extracurricular activities. Another HomeBridge advantage is the allowance of up to 2 classes at a local high school with no allotment reduction. Your student can learn at his or her pace and still be connected to friends in the school district. HomeBridge, Juneau's hometown homeschool, 209-HOME.
As we travel around, we get a chance to talk to live audiences, too. We were down in Fort Worth, Texas. There we were in the second largest state. So, we had a chance to talk to all those Texans. They expected to hear something about our Alaska. I'm not quite sure they expected to hear this. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Larry Beck, Alaska's official ambassador of goodwill. I'm very proud and happy to be here deep in the heart of Texas to give you all a warm and cordial greeting from my Alaskan friends and to invite you all to come north to taste the last frontier, to enjoy it with us. I'm also here to talk a little bit about Alaska, but I want to put your Texas hearts at ease. I have not come down deep in the heart of Texas to brag about the 49th state. However, since you are here and you've indicated an interest, I thought I might get by with pointing out just some of the unique things about Alaska, keeping my voice down so that you won't think I'm bragging. First of all, we're the widest state in the Union. Now, I hope nobody has any questions about that, but if you do, sometime take a map of Alaska and a map of the United States, superimposed, same scale. You'll find that Alaska stretches from Savannah, Georgia, clear out to San Diego, California, coast to coast, which causes some problems up there. As you imagine, we have 4 time zones then, the same as the United States. And think of that, all in one state, 4 different time zones. And then I could take you out to the end of the Aleutian chain. We would come to a tiny island called Attu. Now, they bent the time zone so as not to confuse our good Aleutian Alaskans, but geographically, obviously, when you look at the map, Attu is in tomorrow. Or yesterday, I forget which it is out there all the time, but at any rate, we are very wide. Now, since they're playing around with 180th, which is the international dateline, you can look again at the map, and it's obvious that Alaska is the furthest east state at the same time it's the furthest west state, which is at least quite unique. And then because of our far north and our far west position in Alaska, we have some very interesting natural phenomena. And as we do our shows as far south as the northern part of the United States, we've been in places like Seattle, Great Falls, Minneapolis, Chicago. They always ask us if that little rosy glow that they see in the sky might not be the northern lights. Well, perhaps, we say, the southern fringes. But the full display of aurora borealis can only be seen in the 49th state of Alaska. Longer days. No big deal, you're liable to say, here in Fort Worth. Everybody has longer days in the summertime. The length of our longest day may interest you, ladies and gentlemen. If I could take everybody out to the Dallas-Fort Worth airport, we could fly north to the northernmost point on the North American continent. We would find ourselves gathered together near Barrow, Alaska. Now, we could stand together near Barrow, Alaska, and for 82 straight days the sun never sets. It just arcs gracefully toward the horizon, blending sunrise and sunset, the eternal, mystic land of the midnight sun. And while we're there enjoying that, I should point out something about its location. It's on the North Slope of Alaska. We would hope some of you have heard of the North Slope. It's a little piece of real estate we Alaskans keep hidden north of the Brooks Range, a mere 1,500 miles long and 400 miles wide. Miles and miles of miles and miles. However, under that rolling tundra country, we've discovered oil. Now, I'm not foolish enough to stand here in Fort Worth, Texas, and try to convince you that we're the only state that produces oil. As a matter of fact, it was first discovered in Pennsylvania, California, Texas, Oklahoma, Louisiana. 11 other states produce oil, ladies and gentlemen. A little. I might talk about the quantity of oil in Alaska, but before I do, let me tell you, I have not come down here to just talk about Alaska in terms of big figures to try to snow you under. I think a billion is enough to work with. If you'd like to walk a billion inches sometime, let me tell you that's halfway around the world. A billion minutes ago, Christ was here on the face of the earth. So, we don't throw our billions around lightly up there, and I'm going to share with you that we have, under the great North Slope of Alaska, 10 billion barrels of oil. Still, how much oil is that? If I could get all that oil in barrels and stack those barrels end to end, 10 billion barrels would reach up to the moon. 18 times. Now that's 10 billion barrels. That's why we built the mighty Trans-Alaska Pipeline. 800 miles, $8 billion, the largest private enterprise construction project in the history of the world. And while we're gathered together in Fort Worth this Sunday afternoon, right at this very moment in the Will Rogers Auditorium, oil is spilling down that... Oil is surging down that pipeline. Surging. But before they could get one quart of oil out of there, they had to fill it full of $80 million worth of black gold. So oil times are exciting times in our Alaska. The natural gas will be coming out. Tons and tons of... Let me share with you about the coal. We have enough coal. We're just under 1 trillion tons of coal. So we have enough coal at the present rate of consumption to keep the whole United States in coal for 1,000 years. Now, I'm not bragging about it. It's just up there. I thought I might talk a little bit about size here in Texas, but before I do, let me tell you, I've not come down here to just talk about how big everything is in Alaska. As a matter of fact, you can get a reputation as a whole state if your citizens going all over the place blowing off about how big everything is, y'all. So we won't do that, but I thought some friendly comparisons might be good. I figured out that you could take the 9 smallest states and put them in the area of the North Slope alone. If you wanted to fill up all of Alaska, it would take the combined area of the 21 smallest states. Alaska is shaped somewhat like a dipper if you look at it in proper perspective. You could reach down and grab it by its handle. We call Southeast Alaska the Panhandle. And then you could take that dipper and go down and scoop up California, Texas, Montana, the 3 smallest states, and have some dipper left over. Your largest national forest is in Alaska by far. It's called the Tongass National Forest. It's about the size of our sister state of West Virginia. The second largest national forest is up there, and that's called the Chugach. It's about the size of the Garden State of New Jersey. Twice the size of the state of Delaware is your largest national monument. It's Glistening Glacier Bay in southeast Alaska. The second largest national monument is up there. It's out on the Alaska Peninsula. I could take you out there and introduce you to Mount Katmai National Monument, formed mostly the landscape when Mount Katmai blew its stack back in 1912. Active volcanoes. Active volcanoes. While you're counting the number of active volcanoes you have here in the Lone Star State, I might mention that we probably have 20 to 25 perking along up there. It's hard to keep track of those critters, you know. While we're talking about active volcanoes, part of that Mount Katmai National Monument, because of volcanic action, is called the Valley of 10,000 Smokes. Mystique and beautiful and 10,000. I hate to introduce all those round figures, but you see, we can't be responsible for counting everything up there. We get to estimate some things. It is estimated that we have 10,000 rivers and streams and tributaries meandering about our Alaska. Think about that, 10,000. That's also the number of lakes one great state says it has. I'm not here to put that state down, or any state. It's just that we're not in that league. We don't have 10,000 lakes. We don't have 100,000 lakes. We have 3 million lakes in the state of Alaska, ladies and gentlemen. Let's not discuss mud puddles here in Fort Worth tonight either. 2 million of those lakes are over 20 acres in size. Large lakes. Large is the description of glaciers I get when I visit some of my sister states. I've been there. I've seen them. Little bits of ice and snow hanging in them. I'd like to share with you, in all modesty, we have almost one half of the world's glaciers in Alaska. 5,000 majestic rivers of ice. I'm going to name them all for you. There's a Matanuska, Mendenhall, Taku, and Malaspina, Bering, Loga, David, Susanna, Chichitina, Russell, and the Allen, and Nelchina, Taslina, Muir. Well, only 165 have names anyway. But one of them, the mighty Malaspina Glacier, one river of ice all by itself, is larger than the country of Switzerland. Mountains? I'm so glad you asked. We have 5 major mountain ranges in the state of Alaska, ladies and gentlemen. The highest mountain in continental United States is Mount Whitney, off in California. Well, we have 14 peaks that surpass Mount Whitney in height. And as a matter of fact, the highest mountain in the entire world. It's not in Alaska, unfortunately. However, it's Mount Everest, right? 29,000 soaring feet. It cheats. It starts on a plateau of about 14,000 feet, and then sneaks on upward. Let's play this game fairly, shall we? With size and sea level and surrounding terrain. And under those rules, the highest, largest, most mammoth peak base to tip in the world today is undoubtedly 20,320-foot Mount McKinley. In Alaska. coastline. We got more coastline than the East Coast, the Gulf States, the West Coast, toss in Hawaii. We got one bay that's larger than Pennsylvania. We got two oceans. We got three seas. And we've got 34,000 miles of shoreline, more than all the rest of the smaller states put together. Space-wise, 1 million acres of land for every day in the year. Think about that. That's plus 375 million acres of land. That translates to 586,400 square miles, and that, my Fort Worth friends, is 2.5 times the size of the sovereign state of Texas. 1/5 the size of the whole United States. We also have the most shy and modest folk in all the world.
Alaska's Ambassador of Goodwill, Larry Beck, the late Larry Beck. Time is 3:36, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon, where our next guests are going to be talking about the college and career fair coming up here to a school near you, Debbie Banaszak and Karen Smolin. Thank you very much for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So describe, first of all, Debbie, what you do as a career counselor.
Well, I work at Thunder Mountain High School, and I am the career counselor for the school. Boy, so many things. One of them, of course, being helping to coordinate this college fair every year, but also lots of other things. We help to organize the apprenticeship fair, job fairs, just all sorts of things, after-school programs, summer programs. So, yeah, lots of various things, helping students find their way to college, giving them like career assessment tests, that sort of thing, to see where they might want to go to school.
And she has a host of information about scholarships for students as well.
How do you begin to figure out what a college-bound student might want to do with the rest of their life?
Yes, yes. Or, you know, some students might want to go into the workforce, or they might want to go into the apprenticeship or trade. So we try to help them figure out where their life is going to be heading to, what's the best fit for their personality, for where they want to be in the future.
Are there any figures as to what people wanted to be when they were in high school versus what they actually turned out to be later on in life?
Well, gee, I'm probably a good example of that. I got my degree in political science. I loved government. I loved politics. And then here I am, a career advisor. And what's interesting is when I myself took some of these career assessment tests, interestingly enough, it showed up I should be an event planner, a counselor, a career advisor, the very things I'm doing right now. So I do think that, you know, looking at and taking some of these career assessments can really point students in the right direction, and maybe they'll get a degree in something that they actually want to do.
So the college fair happens at Thunder Mountain High School Gymnasium this Friday, October 21st. There's over 60 colleges and career training organizations where they're going to be represented. Want to tell me a little bit more about what goes on there, Karen?
Sure. There are, I don't know, 75, maybe 80, Debbie?
Yeah, I think we're up to over 80 now.
80 representatives from around the country, locally, statewide, as well as from schools around the country coming, who talk to students. We set up tables for them in the Thunder Mountain High School gym, and they talk to students about their schools, answer questions, have all kinds of information for them. So there's a schedule that JD High students and Yakus Dakahiti students arrive in the morning session, and in the afternoon, Thunder Mountain High School students attend. There's a public session from 5 to 6 in the afternoon, as well as there are some out-of-town schools that might be coming in the morning session as well. So it's a kind of an open fair where students can wander and talk with different schools that they're interested in, or just start asking all schools about what they offer.
What are some of the common questions high school students want to know?
Well, I think, you know, coming from Juneau, a lot of it is proximity. I mean, we are seeing mostly West Coast schools represented at this fair. That's pretty typical. There are a few East Coast schools, Dartmouth and Simmons and a couple of others, Duke, that are coming as far as the East Coast. But mostly West Coast schools, lots of obviously the Alaska schools. And students want to know a lot about it, like where it's located, how many students attend, what the breaks might be for tuition, the WUI, the Western Undergraduate Exchange Program, whether that school participates in that, because that is a major tuition break for students from Alaska.
Before you go into much further, could you tell me about WUI, please?
The WUI stands for the Western Undergraduate Exchange, and basically it's, I believe, 14 or 15 Western states that sort of have teamed together to provide tuition breaks for students traveling to school between those states. So it's not in-state tuition. It's like 150% of in-state tuition, but it is still much less than out-of-state tuition. So that's a big draw for Alaska students.
And besides colleges being represented, there's also career tracking organizations?
Are there career organizations? There are Alaska Department of Labor is there, the military is there, some apprenticeship or Department of Labor representatives might be there for apprenticeship programs. I'm looking at the list here.
There's technical schools, like there's
right.
Universal Technical Institute, there's Illinois Institute of Technology, there's WyoTech.
AvTech,
which is the Alaska Vocational Technical School. So there are technical schools represented as well as your typical four-year colleges.
Right, and even Central Oregon Community College will be there. And I'm just kind of looking down the list here. Oregon Coast Culinary Institute will be there. So there's career and technical programs as well as four-year full degree programs that will be participating.
I'm going to use the H word here. What kind of homework should a student or their parents do before they go to the career fair, the college fair?
Well, I think they should think about what they want to ask, what they're looking for, and inquire about campus living, resources to help students, what else? The programs, of course, the degree programs that they offer, and any financial aid or resources they may offer.
Well, and whether they do participate in this WUI program, because of the downturn in the economy with some of the states that participate in that, some of the WUI programs that have existed in times past are going away. For example, the University of Idaho, a big popular school with a lot of Alaska students, dropped their WUI program a couple of years ago. So one big question would be the WUI, whether they're a WUI school, what their admission requirements might be. It might be more than what they've taken in high school, and that's something a student needs to consider.
I think one of the perks for having your job would be to admit the number of times you could pronounce the word WUI, because it's just kind of fun.
Yes. So I think those are all questions. I always tell students maybe to pick 3 to 5 schools that they could really focus on, and we give them a handout at the door with some ideas of questions to ask and, a map of the gymnasium so they can find the schools they're looking for. And in the evening, we're just really hoping to get folks out there between 5 and 6. It's a great opportunity to have, this many colleges and universities and technical schools represented. And it's a great way for parents to go with their students or without their students and learn a lot about available opportunities.
It's been a long time since I've taken the aptitude test to find out what I wanted to be out of high school. What kind of questions do they have on there?
The couple that I've taken are mostly like and dislike questions and yes and no questions. So pretty simple, and some of them seem very arbitrary, but in the end they are looking for a personality type, whether you are interested in working with people or whether you're working with things or ideas or with your hands, somebody who who might be interested in being an electrician or a carpenter might not be happy going to a four-year school with, an emphasis in English. They maybe should go into the trades or something else. So, some of those assessment tests really do try to focus students in on what fits best with their personality.
Maybe one idea would be for the student to go during the day and then coming back with their parents later on to explore some of these schools and career choices in more in detail.
Right, that's definitely an option for students to do, so they can visit it twice.
And we have parking, so that's not an issue. So, we have plenty of parking, and we just welcome anybody to come between 5 and 6.
If people need more information about the College Career Fair, how can they find it out?
You can contact Thunder Mountain High School. You can contact me, Debbie Banaszak, at 780 1964, and I will get back with you.
Over the years that you've been involved with students, has the College of Career Fairs grown in number, as far as participating in colleges? And
it's kind of gone up and down. This is my fourth year, and I think we had a bit of a downturn the last couple of years, probably due to the economy. A lot of colleges were not sending representatives on the Alaska circuit. But our numbers are pretty good this year, and so I'm hoping that's going to be on the upswing again.
That's a good thing to do if you want to wonder what you're going to be doing with the rest of your life.
Exactly.
All right, Debbie Benizek and Karen Smolin, anything you'd like to add I might have forgotten to ask?
No, just we're looking forward to seeing students at Thunder Mountain on Friday and hopefully parents in the evening.
No.
Thank you. Thank you for coming by.
I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
I am a leader.
Volunteer.
I give back to my community.
Alter, I am Spirit.
I am Spirit of You.
I am Spirit of You.
Here's my story.
Here are stories.
An all-girl group of West Anchorage High School photography students mill about a cafe on a sunny evening for a first Friday art walk event. Their best shots and the favorites taken by their sister school classmates hang in frames on the walls around them. This collection of images were taken during cultural exchanges these teens made with youth from the village of Brevig Mission on the Seward Peninsula. Through the Alaska Humanities Forum's Sister School Exchange, these four urban kids spent time in the bush and later played host when their new friends visited Alaska's largest city. Mandy Davis is the urban teen's photography teacher. This is the second group of exchangees she's ushered through the program.
I think that they learn a lot about themselves. I think that they don't know how they're going to react, and they just think, oh, either it's a vacation, or they think, oh man, this is going to be really hard. But what I think that is unexpected for them is that they often are like, wow, this is really awesome, and, you know, I want to go back, or this way of life isn't, you know, so different than ours.
18-year-old West High student Emma Steinzig says along with searching for interesting images while she was in Brevig, she also did a lot of instructing with the friends she made there.
You kind of have to help them learn how to take a good photo. We learn a lot in photo one about like mergers, not have a merger in the photo, and kind of keep your picture interesting.
Other West High student photographers include Allison Lubeck, Annalise Decker, and Andrea Looper. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
I am a teenager.
I am an Alaskan. I give back.
Do you see me? Recognize youth ages 12 to 19 at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Association of Alaska School Boards.
Kick it with me, Angelina, your host of Tideline on Wednesday nights, 5 to 7 on KRNN. I play a diverse mix of Americana, country roots rock, and southern swamp stomp. I often have musicians stop by for a chat and a song in the studio. That's Tideline Wednesday nights, 5 to 7 on KRNN 102.7.
This is Bird Note. Hear that? It's the chatter of hungry pine siskins at a thistle feeder. Putting out a feeder is easy. The next step may be a challenge, but it's the most important part, keeping it clean and free of disease. A clean feeder is a life and death matter to some birds. Pine siskins, in particular, are prone to salmonellosis, a deadly bacterial disease easily transmitted from bird to bird. For this reason, a thistle feeder shouldn't have a tray. Clean your feeder at least once a week, more often if you have lots of birds eating from it. You may want to have an extra feeder. One feeds the birds while the other is being cleaned and dried. Also, take time to rake up and dispose of seeds underneath the feeder every few days. Birds are fussy. This bird wants sunflower seeds and another bird wants millet. They'll simply toss any seeds they don't like. What a waste! You can attract specific birds and minimize the waste by choosing the right food and the right feeder. Learn what foods attract what birds, and especially how to protect those birds when they visit at our website, birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Malamute Saloon. The kid that handled the music box is hitting a jagtime tune, and back of the bar, in a solo game, sat dangerous Dan McGrew. And watching his luck was his light of love, the lady that's known as Lou. When out of the night, which is 50 below, and into the din and the glare, there stumbled this miner, fresh from the creek, dog dirty and loaded for bear. Well, he looked like a man had a foot in the grave, scarcely the strength of a louse. Yet he tilted his poke of dust on the bar and then called for drinks on the house. Well, there was none could place that stranger's face, though we searched our heads for a clue. But we drank to his health, and the last to drink was dangerous Dan McGrew. You know these men that just seem to grip your eyes and hold them hard like a spell? And such was he. And he looked to me like a man that had lived in hell, with a face most hair and the dreary stare of a dog whose day is done. He watered a whiskey in his glass, and the drops fell one by one. And I got to wondering who he was. I was trying to figure out what he'd do. And I turned my head, and there, watching him, was a lady that's known as Lou. And in his eyes went a rubberin' around the room, and well, he seemed in a kind of a daze. Until at last that old piano fell in the way of his wondering gaze. The ragtime kid was having a drink, and there was nobody else on the stool. So that stranger, he stumbles across the room and flops down there like a fool. In a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt, he sat, and I watched him sway. And then he clutched the keys with his taloned hand. Good Lord, how that man could play. Say, was you ever out in the great alone when the moon was awful clear? And the icy mountains hemmed you in with a silence you most could hear. With only the howl of a timber wolf as you camped there in the cold. A half-dead thing in a stark, dead world. Clean mad for the muck called gold. While high overhead, green, yellow, and red, the north light swept in bars. Well, then you have a hunch what that music meant. Hunger, night, and the stars. Hunger not of the belly kind that you can banish with bacon and beans, but the gnawing hunger of lonely men for a home and all that it means. For a fireside far from the cares that are, four walls with a roof above, also crammed full of cozy joy and crowned by a woman's love. A woman that's dearer than all the world and true as heaven is true. Good Lord, how ghastly she looks through her rouge, a lady that's known as Lou. And then all of a sudden the music changed, and it was so soft that you scarce could hear. Yeah, but you felt that your life had been looted clean of all that it once held dear. That someone had stolen the woman you loved, and that her love was a devil's lie, and that she guts was gone, and the best for you was to crawl away and die. It was a crowning cry of a heart's despair, and it thrilled you through and through. I guess I'll make her a sprite in my air, said dangerous Dan McGrew. The music almost died away, and then it burst like a pent-up flood, and it seemed to say, repay, repay, and my eyes is blind with blood. The thought came back of an ancient wrong, and it stung like a frozen lash. And then the lust awoke to kill, to kill. And the music stopped with a crash. And the stranger turned. And his eyes, they burned in a most peculiar way. In a buckskin shirt that was glazed with dirt, he sat. And I watched him sway. And then his lips went in a kind of a grin. And his voice was canned. Boys, says he, you don't know me. And none of ye gives a damn. But I want to state, and my words is straight, and I bet my pokes are true, that one of ye is a hound of hell, and that one is Dan McGrew. Then I ducked my head and the lights went out, and two guns blazed in the dark. scream. The lights went up, and two men lay stiff and stark. One of them must have fainted. Pitched on his head, all pumped full of lead, was Dangerous Dan McGrew, while a man from the creek lay clutched to the breast of the lady that's known as Lou. Now, them's the simple facts of the case, I guess I ought to know. They say that stranger is crazed with hooch. I ain't denying it so. I ain't so wise as all them lawyer guys, but strictly between us two. The woman that kissed him and pinched his poke was a lady that's known as Lou. We love to talk about our...
Time is 3:58 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau. Before this, a little bit of music from Paul Rosenthal and Doris Stevenson, and preceded that was Larry Beck. You are tuned to KTUO in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTUO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Auk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AL at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Huna at 91.9. An excursion inlet on Icy Strait, you can hear KTUO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTUO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also live online at www.ktuo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon, Pat Moore will be your host. We'll talk with Alaskan author Debbie Miller. And Alicia Jones from the City Museum will be here to talk about a digital storytelling workshop coming up. Ariel Rolf and Angela Gowdy from the Capital City Rotaract Organization will be here to highlight the upcoming Fest for Breasts. Christy Nami Erickson and Nahan will be here with details about this weekend's Poetry Grand Slam at the Canvas at Renner's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. For the forecast for the tonight, looks like rain showers, low temperatures around 39 degrees. Forecast for Wednesday night, rain showers likely. Thursday looks like more rain showers with high temperatures around 43 degrees. We have next is All Things Considered. Thank you for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon today on Alaska Day, and have a very pleasant evening.